As we get back into God's inspired word today, let's open our Bibles to Daniel chapter number 1, verse 18, and resume the story of Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, the three named young men among many that Nebuchadnezzar took out of Judea into exile, but placed them into a training program where they would potentially become part of his court advisors. So Daniel chapter 1, verse 18 says that at the end of the time, which is 3 years, so that time started early on in 605, so we're looking at sometime in 603 BC. So at the end of that time, when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king spoke with them, and among all of them, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they stood before the king. So of all the Judean candidates for the court spots in the advisory council of Nebuchadnezzar, these four young men were the standouts. And after the king himself had interviewed them, they were now placed into responsible positions. Now, they're the junior members of this court at this point, but they have great promise. And of course, the gift of God is going to promote them very quickly. Verse 20, in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in his kingdom. Now, this advisory council includes a lot of members who are purporting to be tapped into the spirit world for the benefit of the Babylonian Empire. Now, I say purport because while some of them may actually be messing around in the spirit world with demonic beings, others of them may be playing a political game where they try to just get a sense of what the king wants to hear and therefore tells him those sorts of things in order to please him and to stay in his good graces. But Daniel and his three friends have already shown themselves to be better counselors in the things that he interviewed them about than all these other guys who have been there for a long time. And then verse 21 tells us that Daniel was there, meaning in the Babylonian court system, until the first year of King Cyrus. And that will be the change over time historically between the Medo-Persian kingdom taking over where the Babylonian kingdom has collapsed. And so Daniel will be there that whole time. Chapter number 2. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. And so this is apparently from the type of calendar system that doesn't count the first few months of the king's reign, that his reign officially starts on a specific repeating date on the calendar. This is called an accession year standard. So the second year of King Nebuchadnezzar, again, is 603 BC. So it's the same year that Daniel and his guys started officially working for him. So in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, plural. So he's having this same dream repeatedly, over and over and over again. His spirit was troubled and his sleep left him. So he is losing sleep over this very troubling dream that keeps coming back night after night. Now, some of the English versions give the impression that he's forgotten this dream, that he just has this sense of foreboding. But I don't think that that is an accurate representation of the Hebrew or Greek text that we can find here. I think he knew the dream, and it bugged him that it just kept being repeated. And clearly, it was one that spoke of bad futures for himself and other leaders. And so that's why he is losing sleep. So what does he do? It says, verse 2, then the king commanded that the magicians, don't think of sleight of hand artists here, think of instead magi, the magi, the great ones who are able to study all the works, the written works of the Babylonian libraries, and who are also tapped in, or so they claim, into the spirit world. So the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, again, those are descriptive terms of those that try to monkey around in the occult world to try to either gain information from the spirit world or somehow control the spirit world. And the Chaldeans. Originally, Chaldean was a reference to people living along the Euphrates River farther up toward where the country of Ur was located, up near Haran that Abraham came through. But eventually it started talking about a class of advisors, a very high-placed class of professional advisors to the king of Babylon. So he's basically called in everybody in the advisory council, all the different levels of advisors. And he ordered that they be summoned to tell the king his dreams. So they came in and stood before the king. The king said to them, I had a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream. Now, this is where some of those English versions give the impression that he'd forgotten it. But that's not what's being communicated here. He wants to know what the dream means. And as a further way of them proving that they can provide this information, he wants them to describe to him the dream first. So verse 4. Then the Chaldeans said to the king in Aramaic. Now, Aramaic was a language related to Hebrew. It has similar lettering, pronunciation, but it has different, some of the different vocabulary words and different syntax at different places. A lot of Daniel is actually written in Aramaic because of this time period. Eventually, the Jewish people coming into Babylonian exile will switch from biblical Hebrew over to the Middle Eastern Aramaic. And that's what they will come back from exile speaking as their normal language. And then they'll have Hebrew, biblical Hebrew, that will be like a study language from their history. And so professionals would know biblical Hebrew as well as the Aramaic. A little side issue here that I want to bring out. All right, so they speak to him in this language of the Upper Middle East. O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. So you tell us, we'll explain it. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the word for me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation." So he is absolutely hard-nosed about this. He's in his later 30s, I believe, at this time, and he's probably talking to men that served his father, Nebuchadnezzar, for many years. So these guys are much older than him. But he says, look, this is the way it's going to work, so don't try to wiggle out of it. First, you're going to describe to me the dream that I had. Then second, you will explain to me what it means. Now, verse 7, they answered a second time and said, well, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we'll show its interpretation. The king answered and said, I know with certainty that you are trying to gain time, because you see that the word from me is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there is but one sentence for you. You've agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the times change. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me its interpretation. So he figures they're trying to play for time, trying to mess with him. And he's really upset about this whole thing. It's really got him on edge. And he says, if you can't tell me what the dream was first, why should I trust that you can tell me what the dream means? So first, show your wisdom and your tapping into the spirit world by letting me know what I dreamed. Then you can tell me what it means, and I'll reward you. But if you can't even give me what it means, I will take you down, because apparently you're not nearly as connected to the spirit world as you claim to be. Verse 10, the Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand. For no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult. No one can show it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. So they make the claim that this is unfair. No king has ever demanded this of this advisory council before. The king has always described the dream and allowed them to then give an interpretation of it. That he is asking something that only the gods could do. Only the gods could tell you what your dream was. Well, they're partly right in that, as we're about to see. Verse 12. Because of this, the king was angry and very furious, and he commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. So he is so mad that these guys have been basically parasites on the kingdom all this time, that they cannot give him what he really wants to know, and that is, are you tapped in so much that you could tell me what my dream was? And so he says, I want everybody dead. You're all fired. You're all dead. And so the decree went out, and the wise men were about to be killed. And this is such a universal order that even the newest people brought on are going to be executed as well. And so they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. So all these people are being rounded up, and they're being brought to the palace for this eventual execution of all of them. So they're all in one big mass at the palace, and Daniel and his three buddies are there as well. Verse 14, then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He declared to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree of the king so urgent? What's the rush here that we're all being rounded up and we're going to be executed? What's the deal? Then Arioch made the matter known to Daniel. And Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. So Daniel goes through channels very rapidly to request from Nebuchadnezzar a little time so that he, one of the junior members that was not even there at the earlier council meeting, can talk to God about the issue. After all, the senior guy said, only the gods can provide you this information. So Daniel's message, because I don't know whether he actually got to talk to Nebuchadnezzar face to face, his message was, I can talk to a god, I can talk to the god and get that information for you if you just give me a little time. Continuing in verse 17, Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions. So these four guys together become prayer warriors. And he told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery. See, this top secret information. So that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So they are praying for their deliverance through God's intervention. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night, and then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. So he goes to sleep, and God gives him the exact same dream so that he can describe it in detail to the king, and God also tells him what it means. So Daniel is now set to go back to the palace. But first, we need to praise God. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. Now remember, the name of God is pronounced Yahweh. That's the best I think we can come in our modern times. And it means he who is, because he's always been. He has no beginning. He has no end. He's the only real God. So he says, blessed be that God, the one and only, who has wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what's in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. So this is praise about the fact that there is no God but he who is. He's the one that knows everything. And it doesn't matter how dark it is, it's like light to him. Doesn't matter how secret it is open information to him. Verse 23, to you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and might, and have made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter. So thank you, Lord. I have everything that we asked of you, and I can now go into the king. Verse 24, therefore Daniel went into Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show the king the interpretation. So stop the execution prep. I've got the answer, the thing that the king was looking for. Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste and said thus to him, I have found among the exiles from Judah a man who will make known to the king the interpretation. Now that line, the way it's phrased, makes me think that Daniel didn't have the face-to-face earlier. That the only thing that was passed on to the king was one of the members, one of the junior members, has asked for a little time to talk to their God about this matter. And the king gave it, and now the commander of the guard says, here's the guy that made that request. It's one of the Judeans that you've already met at the end of his training, and he's going to tell you. So the king said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, because remember, when you started into this program as a foreigner to the Babylonians, you were given a Babylonian name. So Belteshazzar is Daniel's Babylonian name. Are you able to make known to me the dream that I've seen and its interpretation? Daniel answered the king and said, no wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery that the king has asked. But There is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. So Daniel tries to make it very plain. King, only the real God can do what you asked, and that is provide you the dream that you wanted to be told about. And so I'm about to do that, and he's also the one that's going to give you the interpretation, just like you wanted. So your dream and the visions of your head as you lay in bed are these. To you, O king, as you lay in bed came thoughts of what would be after this. Meaning, you were laying in bed and you were thinking about the future. Which is not surprising because he's only here at the very beginning of his reign. It's the second official year of his kingdom. His dad's only been dead for 3 years. And so he's in his 30s. This is all big stuff for him. And so he wants to know, what does the future hold? And he went to sleep thinking about that, and God gave him this dream. And he who reveals mysteries made known to you what is to be. But as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me not because of any wisdom that I have more than all the living, but in order that the interpretation may be known to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your mind. So this is for you, to help you out. You saw, O king, and behold, a great image. Now, as soon as he said that word, I'm sure Nebuchadnezzar perked up, set up a little straighter, maybe a little bit forward in his throne, because at least he's describing the dream properly at the very beginning. This image, mighty and of exceeding brightness, stood before you, and its appearance was frightening. The head of this image was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver. And I'm sure by the time that we get this far, Nebuchadnezzar is going, that's right! That's exactly right! Now, he might not have said those things out loud, but he knows this specificity is accurate. Its middle and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. That's some major detail right there. And as you looked, a stone was cut out, but by no human hand, and it struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Now, that's probably the thing that really scared him a lot, is he's staring at this image, trying to figure out what is meant by all these different pieces to it, and then suddenly, out of nowhere, comes this stone, and it rolls in or rushes in, and it slams into the bottom of this image, down into the feet, and it topples the whole thing and breaks it into pieces. And verse 35, then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold all together were broken in pieces and became like chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, so that not a trace of them could be found. And so all of what was this image is gone. It was pulverized into dust, and now it's blown away. But the stone, that is the stone cut out but not by human hands, the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the earth. So now the stone becomes everything in Nebuchadnezzar's vision. Everything is just blotted out by its presence. This was the dream, verse 36, and now we will tell the king its interpretation. So Daniel has done exactly what Nebuchadnezzar required of his other council members, and they couldn't do. Tell me the dream that I dreamed. So he has, with great detail and specificity. That gives Nebuchadnezzar confidence that what comes next is an accurate interpretation of that dream. Let's get started on the interpretation. Verse 37. You, O King, the King of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power and the might and the glory, and into whose hand he has given wherever they dwell, the children of man, the beasts of the field, the birds of the heavens, making you rule over them, all of these things, you are the head of gold. So King Nebuchadnezzar, you and your kingdom, your dynasty, if you will, is represented by the head of gold. Now, partly that would have made Nebuchadnezzar quite happy, because gold is the most valuable substance that they used in that time period. It's very shiny. But the rest of the story is that his dynasty, his kingdom, is not going to last. So that's going to bother him a little bit, I'm sure. Verse 39. Another kingdom inferior to you shall arise after you. That's the silver shoulders and chest. This is going to be another kingdom, another dynasty that will show up after the Babylonian Empire. We know that this is going to be the Medes and the Persians. Well, it's inferior, just like silver is inferior in value to gold, but it will still replace the Babylonian Empire. And then, yet a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. So as we're going down the image, the metals get less precious, but harder. And that third kingdom we'll discover is going to be the Macedonian Greek kingdom. And then verse 40 introduces this thought. And there shall be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, because iron breaks to pieces and shatters all things. And like iron that crushes, it shall break and crush all these. That's the Romans that come last in this series before the stone comes and breaks it all down.